Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. So I don't really have very much news from the last time. I've been at home, I've been reading bits and pieces, not a huge amount. I've been catching up on some podcasts and other things rather than listening to audiobooks. So today's episode is going to be an ebook which I started reading the first half of last year and just finished off over the last few days here. So but before I do get to that, thanks for all the feedback. I told people if you've listened to every single episode so far out on the feed, why not email me and tell me that you're 100% and which of the episodes are your favourite. And of course I got quite a bit of feedback that way, but another place that I did, I put on goodreads.com, there's an SFBRP listener group on there, and I started a thread on there asking people to say what is their favourite episode of a bad book, of a ranting review of a book, and what is their favourite episode of a book which I reviewed and really recommended. And I got a lot of feedback. I actually went back and listened to some episodes that I recorded a few years ago. For example, the Calculating God episode seemed to come up quite a few times. And so I went back and listened to that and a few others and actually really enjoyed it. I understand why people enjoy listening to me rant. Fortunately, reading lots of books that I really enjoy and doing good reviews and looking back through the list of books that I've reviewed recently, not very many 1 or 2 star reviews for a long time, which is great. That means the recommendations that people are sending in of which books I should read are good recommendations. So please keep sending in good recommendations. I have actually thought, well, maybe I'll check out some books which I'm not really sure of, that I'm not really sure I'm going to enjoy completely, but it's really difficult to put me through, especially like if one of these books is going to take me 10 hours to read, 10 hours of a book which I know I'm not going to enjoy, or 20 hours of reading a book that I know I'm not going to enjoy just to give a ranting review. I'm not sure if it's worth it, even if, like I say, listening back to some of these ranting reviews is pretty good. So I'm gonna get onto today's book. And it's a weird book because I listened to an interview, a number of interviews, with Michael J. Sullivan on the First Million Words podcast. I was also a guest on the First Million Words podcast, and I think I posted those into the SFBRP feed back in September, October, whenever they were put there with those guys. And I enjoyed what he said about writing, and I enjoyed what he said about the his story and the different characters and the questions that he asked, and he answered them in ways I was thinking, oh, this guy seems to have a lot of good ideas. Well, not so much about writing, but more about storytelling, like what to concentrate on. I thought, well, I'll read his book, because if I read his book and enjoy it, it means that I will accept his writing advice. And I've mentioned this a few times before, and I think actually on the First Million Words podcast that I did, that if you hear some writing advice, make sure you do your own research and check the books that this person has already assigned their own advice to, or use their own advice to eat their own dog food in regards to their own writing. And if it's good, well, that's probably good advice then. So I checked out the book by Michael J. Sullivan. It was called the Theft of Swords. And when I started reading it, I thought I just got The Crown Conspiracy. But it turns out that the Kindle book that you buy is the first two books in a 6-book series. Now, apparently all of these books were written before the first one was published. But the idea being like episodic storytelling. So the series is this. It goes The Crown Conspiracy, Avimpatha, Nifron Rising, The Emerald Storm, Wintertide, and Persepolis. I guess I've never actually said those words out loud before. So the 6 books are collected into a set of 3 collections, I guess. And so we get The Crown Conspiracy and Avimpatha combined into The Theft of Swords. But when I started reading that, I guess I kind of forgot about that and just got into the story, and I didn't realize how much it wasn't going to be just like, oh, and get to here, and then a cliffhanger, and now the next bit of the same story and another cliffhanger, and now the next bit of the same story and another cliffhanger. It's very much not like that. It's much more, okay, here is one story, now here is the next story, which is good. But it did mean that when I got to about halfway through the full ebook, I was, you know, coming up to like 45%. I was like, wow, this is really moving quickly. It's gonna, you know, it seems like it's coming to a close, and of course it was, but that was my own confusion there. So let's set this up. It's a fantasy series. It's a fantasy book that I read here. And the fantasy world is very much based on, you know, well, let me put it this way. The writing style is very brisk. It's very clean, and it's very, I wouldn't say it's good writing as such. It's there just to do its job, if you know what I mean. And I guess Michael J. Sullivan, he did mention this in the podcast, and there's an interview with him at the end of the ebook itself, and he talks about writing the book and what he does with the language and stuff. I didn't read the whole interview because it did repeat quite a bit of the stuff on the First Million Words podcast that he did there. But it was, but it's interesting that he's set up a world which he doesn't need to, and his writing style means that he doesn't need to describe everything that's going on in the world of the book. He can just say, there is a city here, okay? Right. And he doesn't describe anything more. It's just like, yeah, you can fill in the blanks. You know, he's just presuming that you know all the fantasy stuff, and he's presuming that you understand the ideas, the tropes, and so he doesn't have to spend a long time on descriptions, and it all comes back to the story. It all comes back to the plot. It all comes back to moving the characters around. Unlike a lot of fantasy books where, okay, this person arrives, now let's spend a long time talking about it and describing what they're wearing and describing where they're going. And they're going through a forest, now let's describe this. You know, just to... you know, mentioned The Great North Road, which was the book that I reviewed in the last episode. That was very much, okay, we've got these characters, now let's describe a lot of stuff about them and a lot of stuff about where they're going and where they're standing and what they're looking at and what they're wearing, what they had for dinner and where they're going to go now. All of that kind of stuff is just cut out, which is very refreshing for a fantasy title like this. But because of that, it means that it can be as adventurous in its descriptions of the things that you picture in your mind, or as not as adventurous. It kind of relies on your own imagination. If you read this book and you're just thinking, okay, I'm just going to transpose the flavor text from these other books, the descriptions from these other books, and just put them in place. If they need to be there in place, well, I'm just going to do that. But it's up to the reader to decide what they think the kind of level of technology even is in many ways. And, you know, here's a human, here's a prince. What does the prince look like? Well, it doesn't matter. We're just going to say it looks like a prince. Now just go with a prince. Imagine a prince. You got the prince. Right, let's move on with the story. So there's a lot of that kind of stuff going on. But the general setup is that thousands of years in the past, there were elves, and then there were dwarves, and then there were humans all turned up, very much like Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit, all that kind of Middle-earth kind of area. You got these different races going around. You got the goblins and the dragons and all these different, and magicians and not magicians, wizards and elves and orcs. Probably orcs. Maybe you haven't seen any orcs yet, but there's definitely dwarves and elves and humans and wizards. Those are mentioned all in the first book. And the second story brings in a dragon as well. And so the elves were driven out of the human lands, driven across this big river. And they are on the other side of the river, and the humans are left on this side of the river. And that was 1,000 years ago. And all of the empire... controlled all of human lands and drove out the elves. That kind of broke up into lots of different kingdoms, and now there's lots of different kingdoms. Some of them are led by, you know, the old royal families, and some of them are led by dukes, and some of them are owned by the church, and there's other new countries that are being built up as people go exploring and, like, capturing more territory out in the wilds. The book opens... with, you know, political maneuvering between these two, between different kingdoms that we have here. And some of them are going, oh, we need to go and marry this person off here, and this person's going to marry that person, and we need to send a letter here, and we got to do this. And in this, all these spies that are being sent around, lots of squabbling between the politics of all these things. And this really introduces our first set of characters, which is Royce and Hadrian. And they are main adventurers. One of them is a swordsman. He carries three swords all the time. He's got a normal sword, a bastard sword, and a one-handed or short sword. And his partner is the thief, and he's very sneaky and can pick locks and get into any building, and they go adventuring together, and they can, you know, it's like, tell you what, just hire us to do anything. If you need something stealing, if you need something planting, if you need someone killing, all of that kind of stuff, just get in contact with us. And that's what they do. So they're introduced, and they have to, I think they have to steal a letter from somewhere or pick up a letter and plant the letter. And there's, I read this first story back in September, so it's not quite fresh in my mind. But they have to climb a tower, and they get into a tower, and they come down the tower again, and a bit of it like Ocean's 11 kind of adventuring going on there. And then they are contacted by a guy who said, hey, I need you to go into this tower. Go into the castle, and the king's castle. And I want you to steal a sword, because this is the sword which belongs to this guy. And he challenged me to a duel. And if he has his own sword, he'll be able to beat me. And if he doesn't have his own sword, he won't be able to beat me, and I've already stolen the sword, and it's in this chapel here. And so these guys, Hadrian and Royce, they go in, and they don't really want to take the job, but it's going to pay well, and they go in, and of course, it's a setup, it's a trap. They get framed and get thrown in jail. And from then on, of course, you have to have, like, the princess and the prince, and there's a whole big thing going on there, and the king dies, and what's going to happen here? And then the death gets pinned on the Royce and Hadrian, and then they get sprung out of jail, and they go on another quest, and the prince has to take over the kingdom again, because it's trying to be claimed by the evil uncle. And I kind of give away that it's trying to be claimed by the evil uncle, because it's so obvious that's going to be happening. They might as well just said, enter left, evil uncle character. And you're like, okay, well, this is the evil uncle. I bet he's the one behind the whole plot. And guess what? He's the one behind the whole plot. And so it continues. Now, these kind of plot elements don't really seem that new or like original or exciting or interesting in any way, but what actually brings them to life is the interesting writing by not so much the interesting writing, like this, like the characters are stock characters and interesting they could be interesting characters, but so often they're like, oh, and now I'm going to be the damsel in distress, okay, and now I'm going to be the mysterious wizard, okay, you be the mysterious wizard, and now I'm going to be the thief, and I'm going to be the hooker with a heart of gold, and I'm going to be the beggar, and I'm going to be the dwarf, and I'm going to, very stereotypical in some ways, I'm not sure if they'd be one-dimensional. I guess they are, maybe one-dimensional, maybe two-dimensional, maybe, I'm not sure how many dimensions I'd want to assign to individual characters, the way that they interact is interesting, and the way that the story comes together I did found quite interesting, even though it's very, very brisk. It's very fast-paced. So if you just want to read this, you could read it as a novel, but I think it's much more novella length. It feels very much more like almost like a long, short story, that the basic building blocks of the plot are revealed very quickly, and then it's just moving the people around in interesting ways. Again, that's the plot of the first book. The second book starts off, and it's set a few years later, and some of the characters survive from the first book, and some of them don't survive from the first book, and some of them return, and other people turn up, and you're like, oh, this is going to be interesting. This guy's going to be cool. What happens is that Royce and Hadrian are contacted again by this young poor woman from a village out by the river where the elves are. She says, oh, I need you to help me steal this elven sword from this tower. And I was like, wait a second, another sword? And Hadrian and Royce are like, wait a second, another sword? We have to steal another sword? Well, last time we stole a sword, that's got into all the kind of trouble. And then, of course, I remembered what the title of this book was. It's called Thefts of... Was it Theft of Swords or Thefts? theft of swords. It's not just theft of sword, it's theft of swords. So that both of these stories are kind of combined with the theme of, hey, we're going to get another sword, and somebody else needs another sword. And this time it's the sword is going to be able to kill the dragon. And then you get the whole, you know, dragon, we're going to kill the dragon, we're going to break into another tower, we're going to save the damsel in distress from the dragon, all that kind of stuff. And you think, well, I've seen all this before, haven't we heard all of this before? I guess we have seen all this and heard all this before. And once again, the descriptions of the places, like, and now we're going to this poor village and there's a well and there's a bell and that's all they have. And there's a house up here and the manor house is a castle and it's not really well described. Until it's needed for the action, then it'll be described. And unless it's like you're going to foreshadow something. And this guy had a necklace around his neck. And you're like, wait. You've never described anything or anybody is wearing unless it's going to have plot significance later on. So don't tell me that he's wearing a necklace or an amulet around his neck. And as soon as that pops up, you're going to go, oh, I know what's going to happen later. So it might seem that this is an exercise in just ripping off other people's stories and just playing with old tropes. And kind of it is. But what I really enjoyed about this book is that it seems that the people in the book, there's the game that Michael Sullivan is playing, that the characters in the book are sometimes aware that they're living in the real world, sometimes aware that they're living in a fairy tale, sometimes aware that they're living in a fantasy story, and sometimes aware that they're living in a, you know, like a comedy kind of novel or like a, you know, an Ocean's 11 kind of heist thing. So I noticed this quite a bit in the first book, but in the second book, it really comes to, oh, sorry, the second story in this book, it really comes to the foreground a bit more. But like I say, it's like the people in the world, sometimes they just go, oh, well, you know this, don't you? Yes, of course I know this. Oh, like that. But you get like a character who is, he's this monk and he's lived out in this place by himself, and they go, oh, is there such thing as a green horse? Is there such thing as a pink horse? It's like, no, you don't know. I've never seen a woman before. You're like, really? Is this guy really like that? But then the characters themselves are going, oh, surely he can't be anything like that. He must be a bit crazy. And then later you find out he is a bit crazy and he probably does know what color horses are. But it's, I don't know, it's one of those things. It's like, is this a massive plot hole? Because where they're going is a place where, you know, it's like a monastery that accepts visitors. So it's, you know, they're meant to be a safe haven for travelers going through. So of course he must have seen horses and must have seen women before, but then he hasn't seen them. But then later when you're thinking, well, again, maybe it's a bad characterization, maybe it's a plot hole, but again, it seems to be like, hey, I'm really playing with you. And like the legend that I say, the legends that grow up around these different characters, you see this being played with in many books, where it goes, oh, well, this is the name of the wind is like this. Oh, and people started telling this story about me, and it led to this legend about me, and here's the real story behind this legend about me. And you go, well, you just took 800 pages to say that. Whereas in the Theft of Swords, they go, ah, oh, and what do you do? How did you get that rope across there? Ah, oh, well, how did you get that rope down? It's like, I shot the rope off. Wow, with an arrow. He goes, yeah, I did. And he said, wow, you must be a really great archer. And then the other guy turns to the other guy. You didn't mention that it took you 8 attempts to shoot the, shoot the rope. And in the second book, they go past this theatre and it's like, hey, look at this. There's a play called The Theft of Swords or whatever it's called, or The Crown Conspiracy. And it's like, yeah, these two guys, they broke into the royal palace to steal a sword. And look, and other people are going, wow, that story sounds a bit far-fetched. That sounds like it can never happen. It's like, well, there it is. And again, like I say, when they have to steal another sword, it's both of them like, wait a second, we've been here before. Another time that, like you say, you get the princess and the king is like, you're going to go off to this place. And she's like, no, don't, I don't want to do this. He says, no, you have to go there. And no, you'll be good. You should go over there. So no. And of course, all the time that she's thinking, oh, I'm going to be, he's marrying me off for political reasons. I'm just a pawn for him and I'm going to have to live my life out in this other place. And then the king's like, no, no, I didn't mean that at all. I want you to be the ambassador to there. You can represent our country. And she's like, oh, really? Is that what you meant? Yeah, I thought you said you were marrying me off. And he's like, oh, that was just a joke. So it's like playing with the idea of women being, you know, married off and things, and the king kind of knowing that that is what his reputation should be, that he should be like really politically minded, well, not so much politically minded, but quite callous about his, about the princess and what he's going to do with her. But isn't in the end, and kind of acknowledges that. And then when this dragon turns up, they're going to go, oh, it's a dragon. It's like, well, it's not really a dragon. It's a different, it's like kind of spirit dragon. You know, it's like, well, it's a dragon. How do you kill them? And one guy goes to the other, well, I heard you could kill the dragons, but I heard this story of this archer who once, and there was this, and this, this dragon was flying, and there was in the armpit, there's a bit of the armpit which you can shoot with an arrow, and that's how you kill a dragon, by the unprotected spot near the armpit. And the other guy goes, no, that's not. And so it all the time, every time that it brings up one of these fantasy world tropes and storytelling tropes, it understands, hey, you get this reference. I know that you get this reference, and to know that you should get the, oh, and to make it clear that I think that you should be getting this reference, I'll have one of the characters comment on the reference as well. In the first book, the wizard is like, thou shalt do this, you know, and all really oldie English, these and thous and thou shalt and doesn't and all the other bits and pieces. And then in the second book, he turns up, and they go, hey, wait a second, don't you speak in oldie English, or like old medieval English? And the wizard's like, yeah, but, you know, nobody could understand me, and I've been away for 1,000 years, and turns out that nobody could understand me, so I've been hanging out with other people, and I've learned how to speak. It's like, okay. And then it's not mentioned anymore. And then when that language does come up again, when the dragon speaks it a bit later, you're like, oh, the dragon, yeah, he's been away for 1,000 years as well. So yeah, all the way through, it's like, this is what I'm gonna, like, with the descriptions or the lack of descriptions all the time, it's like, yeah, I'm playing in a fantasy world, I'm playing around with the tropes of fantasy, with the characters, I'm moving them around, and in doing this, he can tell a story which is just as interesting as any other, you know, thousand page, like, I think let me put it this way, the writing in the Theft of Swords is absolutely atrocious compared to something like Game of Thrones. But Game of Thrones, by the end of, you know, all of the political maneuvering and all of the stuff that happens over the 1,000 page or 800 pages of the first book of Game of Thrones, which is called Game of Thrones. No, the first book of the Song of Ice and Fire, which is Game of Thrones. I'm getting confused with the TV series here. All of that kind of stuff could fit into the first 100 pages or to the first single book, which is probably 200 pages or, you know, whatever. This whole ebook here, maybe I should actually just click on Goodreads and see how many pages both books. Yeah, 649 pages this book takes, and that's two stories. By the end of the first story, about halfway through the first story, he gets through as much story as the whole of the first book in the Song of Ice and Fire, which is the Game of Thrones book. So so that's what I enjoy about this book. You can, by relying, self-knowingly relying on the tropes and going, you understand what's going on here, he can get on with telling a fun story about characters that you actually enjoy spending time with. However, like I say, sometimes the characters, because they're not really described so much, he can hide things about them, and you're like, really? How could they only just notice this about the character now? Why is it taking? And then it's like, well, I've always known that about you. Oh, really? Have you always known about it as well? Well, if you always have known about that, why hasn't it never come up? Now, I understand what's going on here because, like I say, Michael J. Sullivan said he plotted out and wrote the entire series before he released the first book. And it does feel like that. The stuff going on in the first book is paid off in the second book. So I think you definitely have to read these in order. But yeah, like sometimes you're going, well, it feels like he's using some of the shortcuts to kind of not to let him move the story on very quickly, but sometimes to hide it from us as well. So, or hide some of the revelations from us as well. Next up, what I would talk about. Oh, yeah, like the writing, like I say, is very brisk. I've mentioned that a few times now. The characters, like I say, very brisk descriptions. I didn't actually make a lot of notes on this. Let me see if I have any other notes here. No, I've actually finished off all of my notes. And I haven't really talked about the themes because, it's difficult to talk about the themes and the ideas of a book like this because it's kind of wrapped up in the overall story. I do think the treatment of women is it's based on other fantasy, and sometimes it's trying to subvert the treatment of women in other fantasy. You think, oh, there's only two female characters in the entire book, or three female characters in the second book. There's a few more female characters introduced, and one of them is like this, and one of them is like that, and they do fit very much into the same fantasy tropes. And this is the matron, and this is the princess, and this is the young peasant girl, and this is the prostitute with a heart of gold, and this is this, and by reading that, I'm just thinking, well, like, all of these other fantasy tropes are kind of being subverted, but then confirmed. And is are the gender roles being subverted and confirmed? So I'm not really sure where this is going to be going, like, or what's going to happen throughout the rest of the fantasy series. Where these where these female characters are going to go? So I think that'd be that I'd have to leave that off for now. And of course, you get the whole the thing that science fiction does quite well. It's like, well, he's a dwarf, but is he a good person or a bad person, or should we judge a dwarf just because he's a dwarf? Is he a good person, or is he a bad person, or is he just dwarves just like humans, and elves, are they just like that? And again, you haven't really met many of these characters, so I'm still a bit I don't really want to say what the statements that are being made in this book are about. For now, it's very, very much conforming to fantasy tropes and the well-worn themes that that fantasy kind of the fantasy novels kind of deal with, and not a lot else. But hopefully through to the end of this book, we're going to get a little bit more. Because the political maneuvering of this book is very, very basic. It doesn't really say very much about the real world. It doesn't really say very much about commerce or, you know, because it's so base. It says, let me put it this way, it says more about fantasy worlds than it does about the real worlds in its thematic explorations of those fantasy worlds. Which, if like me, you enjoy science fiction and fantasy, I do read a lot more of science fiction than fantasy. Again, not really quite sure where I was going with that point. Don't have any notes or anything. So I think I'm just going to wrap up this review. If I have other more things to say about it, I will be continuing this series. So if I've forgotten anything about this book, or if you get any other feedback or things that about this this book, these first two stories that you want me to mention, of course I will be continuing this review. I'll do at least another one episode, I could read the next book and review that, and then the next book and then review that, or I could just read the next two books and then do a review of the entire series, I'm not sure, but there'll be at least another one podcast dedicated to Michael J. Sullivan's full series called The Revelations, which I'm not quite sure of the pronunciation. RIYRIA, Revelations. I'm sure podcasts with Michael J. Sullivan would give the proper pronunciations of that word, but I don't know off the top of my head. I'll revisit this more in the future. I'm gonna give it, let's say, 3.5 stars, but it's kind of a high 3 point, maybe like 3.8, not quite 4 stars though, I don't think, if the writing had been better, because like I say, it's brisk writing, but sometimes it's clunky writing, and sometimes there's action describes, which is, you know, and he went out and was killed, and you're like, well, I know you're trying to move the plot on, I'm trying to move the story on quickly, but sometimes I want a little bit more than, and he went and was killed. And he was killed by a single stab, and you're like, and that's it, and then the chapter ends and you move on, and it's like, ah, sometimes if something important is happening, you could just spend a little bit more time. I don't want the books to be longer, but sometimes it would be nicer to get a little bit more interesting descriptions of things, which wasn't just like, and he did this. 3.5 stars. for this two-book collection. I think I enjoyed the second story a little bit more than the first, because it was like all of the action was kind of bound into this one position. And also, he didn't have to set up any of the characters. He could just get straight on with it. But so there you go. If you enjoyed this review, you can email me, luke@juggalo.net. Also, you can visit my website, lukeburridge.com. You can read my own fiction there, or you can check out my blog, which I've not really updated very much recently because I've been updating the other blog that I'm contributing to at the moment, which is where I'm posting my own book, my analysis of Star Wars and the Bible, called Matthew, Mark, Luke, Skywalker, which you can find at productivebiblegeeks.com. I've been posting that chapter by chapter over the last few months. That kind of stuff. The other thing you can do is follow me on Twitter. I'm Luke Roche there. And finally, you can check out goodreads.com, become my friend on goodreads.com. And that means when I get to the end of my podcast, I can check out what friends of mine thought with this. See, I gave this book 3.5 stars. Generally, it's been given 4.1 stars by general readers of Goodreads, general people on goodreads.com, and 3.3 on average on friends reviews. And my friends are pretty much like 99% SFBRP listeners, so that's a good indication of what you guys would think about this. It's a 3.33 average. Benjamin Love rated it 5 stars. Kevin Zoo rated it 3 stars. Fantasist rated it 4 stars. And so Ken rated it 2 stars. So it's pretty... Most people seem to rate it pretty highly. So yeah, goodreads.com. And also you can take part in discussions with other SFBRP listeners. I think that's it from me. Thanks a lot, and I'll catch you next time.